Google Plus turning into Facebook, never rent a laptop, and is the iPhone 5 in sight? All that and more on the Slongcast. Hello and welcome to this episode of the Slongcast, episode 40. For Tuesday, July 26, 2011. As always, I'm your host, Kevin Slonka, and with me, to my right, Mr. Ryan Lancey.
Word.
Word to your mother. We need to get Vanilla Ice as a guest. He's doing small things like this now, right?
I think he's cruising A1A Beachfront Avenue.
Duh. Well, he has that new TV show, doesn't he?
He does?
Isn't he on like some Flip That House TV show or something? Like he's on something like that. It's you would never think he would be on a show like that, but he's on something like that.
Have not heard of that.
Yeah, so Vanilla Ice, I'm sure you're listening to this. You know, come to Johnstown. We'll get you on the show. Top story of the week. We've been talking about Google Plus for the last couple weeks, and it turns out Google is enforcing a rule that Facebook started to enforce a while ago, but never really did. But Google's doing it. It's the real name policy. And if you don't use your real name on your Google account, your Google Plus account, they will ban you. And they've banned lots and lots of people and companies. No company accounts either. Has to be people. Even William Shatner got banned. But that was an accident. He was just a casualty of this banning.
A casualty.
Yeah.
I joined Google Plus.
And
I was banned.
Good old Captain Kirk. But yeah, it seems, I don't know what you think about this. I personally like this. You know, I mean, I can see where some people such as bloggers or other columnists who don't use their real names because their real names are hard to pronounce. So for their entire lives, they've used a pseudonym mm-hmm. as their name. And now they can't do that anymore because Google's like, no, that's not your real name. Forget it. So I can see the plus and minus of it, but I personally like the real name rule.
Well, here's my thing. People believe there's some level of anonymity on the internet, and I think that's sort of like a myth. And we should just institute real name policies everywhere.
I agree.
So that I think people are less likely to do nefarious things if they're forced to identify themselves. Now, that's not to say that a true criminal will identify themselves correctly, or they may find ways to circumvent it, but
it's one of those things that takes care of most of the problem.
Yeah, it keeps honest people honest.
Right. Kind of like door locks.
Door locks and whatnot.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't have a problem with this. I mean, I guess there's the argument for, you know, the bloggers and all those people who have used pseudonyms for the past 20 years of their writing career. Now people aren't going to know who they are, because they have to use their real name instead of the name they've been writing under. I guess Dr. Seuss couldn't get an account on Google Plus.
Yeah, I don't really feel bad for these people, though, because there's probably an article on Wikipedia about them having a pseudonym.
Yeah, people...
That's over. Those days are over.
People could look it up and figure it out. Everybody knows Dr. Seuss is Ted Geisel.
Yep.
And what was his other pseudonym?
Oh.
It was like Ted LaSieg or something. It was just his last name spelled backwards.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he had two pseudonyms to write kids' books under. Hmm. But still, yeah, I don't have a problem with this at all. There are lots of places out there. This article is from Network World complaining about it, but I have no problem with it.
What was your pseudonym? Like, it was like LULZSEC or something?
Lulzsec?
Yeah.
Way to give that away, Ryan. I'm totally not behind any hacking. Seriously, really. Do not track my IP address. But we have another Google Plus article, and Ryan, I believe you posted this.
I did.
I don't think you bookmarked it, but I remember seeing you share it or bring it up or something. Like, didn't you?
It wasn't me.
Okay, it wasn't you.
As Shaggy said, first and notably.
As Shaggy said.
It wasn't me.
Wasn't me. But I had her on the counter. So this article from GamePro comes from, you know, a site that talks about I don't want to talk about this because this is Google Plus turning into Facebook.
Yeah, I know.
This is Google Plus allowing games.
Well, the nice thing about it, though, is that they're going to have their own, like, so, all right, everybody probably that's tried out Google Plus, they're like, first of all, the first thing you're like, the first thing you think after you try Google Plus is, why the heck doesn't all my Google, like, accounts, like, integrate into it? Like, I was having this discussion with somebody, like, so, like, you can tag something in Google Reader. Guess what? Doesn't show up in Google Plus. You can
Shows up anywhere.
You can buzz about something. It kind of shows up in Google Plus.
Right.
You can put something on your Blogger account. Doesn't show up in Google Plus. There's like a million things you can do.
Right. Post pictures to Picasa. Doesn't show up unless you do it through the Google Plus interface.
Yeah, it's like hey, we have this new service, and guess what? It's not integrated to any of our other services. But I don't know what you'd call it, like, moment of clarity that Google has had thinking about Google Plus, they've decided to put the games stuff on its own tab in the interface. So that way, when you go to Google Plus and all your friends are playing Farmville or Smack the Monkey or whatever other game they have from Zynga.
I've never played Smack the Monkey.
I don't know what.
How do you play that?
There's all these stupid games. There's
I know.
Or Punch the Monkey, sorry.
That was the old banner ad, yeah.
Smack the Monkey is the song. No, that's Shock the Monkey.
Shock the Monkey.
You know, from Peter Gabriel. Sledgehammer.
Oh.
Doesn't he? Or no. What's the name of that song? It's at the beginning. It's called Shock the Monkey.
Either way.
Yeah, there's some song from Peter Gabriel. It's Shock the Monkey. Nonetheless, you don't have to deal with all this, like, crap coming from your friends playing these stupid games, which is my most loathed thing about Facebook.
I cannot tell you, if I go into my stream options, how many times, like, how many page downs I have to hit to go through the amount of applications that I've blocked.
Yeah.
Because of people playing games and using stupid applications.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm smart, you know, I'm sure you are. Like, you block the game, not the person.
Right.
But most of the time, anybody that plays those games, if I block the game, I never see them on my Facebook profile anymore.
Yeah, that's all they do.
Because that's all they do on Facebook. So, I can't stand the game stuff, and I'm glad they're putting it on a separate page if they have to have games.
Yeah, here's what bothers me about this, though. They were smart enough to be able to make a separate tab or a separate stream for games, but we still can't specify a startup stream. Like, whenever we first log in, we get the stream of everybody, friends, following, everything. Mm-hmm. We still can't say, I only want my friend circle to show up when I first log in.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because I think we mentioned this before, you know, how we would like to use Google Plus, and I would like to use it as Twitter and as Facebook, but I don't want the two mushed. I want to click on one stream that is my following for Twitter, and I want to click on another stream that's my friends for Google Plus, Facebook style.
Right.
And they don't let you pick one or the other. It's just all or nothing.
Yeah, and I've noticed this. Like, when I log in, I've got, like, four pages of stuff from, like, Kevin Rose and Leo Laporte.
Yeah.
And, hey, I love you guys. I'm sure you listen to this podcast.
But stop.
But it's like, I don't get any other information in my Twitter stream or my Google stream. It's like, occasionally, I get a post from another friend.
And here's the reason why. Here's the big problem. High activity gets pushed to the top.
Yeah.
Your streams are not chronological order. As soon as somebody, like Kevin Rose, posts something, there's millions of people to follow him. For every person who comments, that gets pushed back up to the top of everybody's stream. So we lose our real friends' information because all of these popular people are getting constantly pushed back to the top.
Yeah, screw you, popular people.
I just saw an article from Catherine Hall. She's a photographer. She's like, I've had it with Robert Scoble. I had to decircle him. His stuff pops to the top. I don't see anything else. He's gone. And really, that's what Google Plus is. They need to at least give you the option to turn off the high activity streaming stuff.
I wonder if she's coined that phrase, decircle somebody.
Seriously, that she should patent that or trademark it or something.
Decircle. You've been decircled.
There's got to be like a or some sort of sound effect to go with it. Ooh, that's good. Maybe the sonic ring, like a circle. Like,
yeah.
Ba-ding! Whatever it is.
Circle would be... These circles.
What was that guy on PBS? He played the piano and he did that one skit where he would say the punctuation marks.
Oh, that's Victor Borga.
Yeah. Like, exclamation point would be...
Yep. And question marks were...
And a comma's like or something. It's hilarious.
If you've never heard of Victor Borga, look him up. He's awesome.
Was it B-O-R-G-E?
Yeah.
Yeah, look him
Played
up.
Played piano and was a comedian.
Hilarious.
Very, very funny.
But while we're still talking about Google, our next article straight from the Google blog talks about something that is actually very cool. So everybody has a URL shortener. If you've ever used, you know, any Twitter client and pasted in a big URL, it always gets shortened via some service like Bitly or is.gd, or, you know, now every other site has their own. So like New York Times has their own nyt.ms or whatever it is. Every site has their own shortener, and Google has had one also, goo.gl, that you could use to shorten any URL. The problem with all of these URL shorteners is you never knew where they were sending you. This was a way that malicious people would hide the real site, and you wouldn't know until you clicked on it where you were going. Well, what Google just did, as of 7/18, is they made a new shortening service called g.co. And this operates just the same as any other URL shortener, with the exception that it will only shorten Google service URLs. So if you click on a link that is g.co/something, you can be guaranteed that it's taking you to a Google.com site, a Blogger site, a Picasa site, something that Google owns, YouTube.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I really like this. You know, so if you ever see a g.co URL, you don't have to worry because Google owns it. Nobody can use it. You know, it's only for their links.
You go, Google. Or should I say UGCO, Google?
You go. Wasn't that a old car?
Yeah.
Like a very small car.
Yeah, it was made in like Yugoslavia or something.
I remember, did you ever see Scott Pilgrim?
No. Nope.
The movie Scott Pilgrim versus the World?
No. Nope.
Dude. Okay. Side note, watch Scott Pilgrim versus the World. For anybody who grew up in the 80s and 90s, you will absolutely love that movie. They reference like all of pop culture, video games, movies. Like, you will know everything from that movie. And I think the dude drove a Yugo in that movie.
Cool.
So I don't know why I brought that up.
That was interesting. I found it interesting.
Yeah, you can borrow it. I have it on Blu-ray if you want.
Okay.
It's awesome. Our next article from Network World.
Oh, you know what?
What?
My laptop has a Blu-ray player, unlike an Apple MacBook.
That is one thing I still dislike about. Although, I don't know if I do dislike it, because I never find myself wanting to watch movies on anything but my TV.
Mm.
Do you watch movies on your laptop?
Occasionally. Mainly because it was the first Blu-ray player I owned.
Right.
No, I do occasionally watch movies. I watch a lot of documentaries online. Like, you know, okay. In the evenings, I'll find something on YouTube and watch it.
Yeah, it's just always been one of those things with me, like, I have a high def TV. I have a Blu-ray player. I refuse to watch anything that isn't 1080, you know, resolution. So I never watch anything on my computer.
Mm. Yeah, that's another nice thing about Dell computers. They have 1080 resolution.
Shut up. But it's on a 20-inch screen. Like, I have 46 inches in my living room. Mm. Why do I want to watch on something smaller?
Well, it's all about pixel density per square inch.
No, it's all about a big ass TV in your living room.
Actually, they did a study on that, and that even though like a small screen closer to your eyes is physically bigger in your field of view, your brain perceives like a 50-inch TV as a bigger object. It's kind of like when you pick up something like really big and it weighs like, say it weighs 50 pounds, but it's huge. You're like, oh, that's light. But if you pick up a bar of gold, which is like, you know, the size of a brick, and it weighs 45 pounds.
You're like, holy crap.
Wow, that's so heavy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably what's happening to me. Like, I just can't stand watching things on a small screen.
Yeah. You're just spoiled, that's all.
I am. I want a new TV, but mine isn't broken yet, so I'm not spending $2,500 on the new Samsung with zero bezel that I want. What was that sound? Was that Ryan drinking old-time Mountain Dew?
Mountain Dew throwback, actually.
Mountain Dew throwback.
Let me see if I can get a good one here.
You probably can't hear it.
It's delicious.
That's all I buy anymore. If I have a choice of buying like Mountain Dew, Pepsi, or Dr. Pepper throwback, that's all I get. I hate the new stuff.
I like real sugar, not the corn fructose crap.
Yeah, high fructose corn crap. Hate that stuff. So our next article from Network World. Kind of cool. Toyota system automatically stops car before it hits a pedestrian. Now, I know you've been interested in all of these car stories that we've had before. Anything about this really get you?
When I saw the video, I was like, wow. You know, it worked. But there's, like, no proof that it, like, I mean, there was somebody in the car, I think, so.
Yeah, I don't think they could have did it without.
Yeah, they didn't show any video of like the person's feet on the pedals, like not pressing the brake.
And right.
It was just like, oh, the car stopped for a mannequin.
Still, I mean.
But I mean, if it can actually do it, which I believe it does, that's impressive. And it brings us one more step to self-driving cars, which is what I really want.
Like, yes.
I want to have a car, but I want it to drive itself.
Yeah, I want to get in my car, recline, put a movie on, and then end up at my destination.
I actually have a feeling that there's probably some people in the like public transportation and also like maybe like the taxi industry that are probably lobbying against this stuff.
I can see that.
Because like it's going to put taxis out of business, I think. I mean, well, I don't know, maybe not like in New York City or like Chicago or the places where there's like where it's really traffic, you know, the traffic density is so high that people take them because they don't want to have to deal with having a car in the city.
Right.
But in other cities, I think like it could really put a hamper on taxis.
Yeah, I mean, what, Johnstown has like what, one taxi? You know, you always see it parked under the bridge waiting for somebody to call.
Yeah, there's like never any around.
Yeah, so here probably not that big of a problem. Like Pittsburgh, that would probably get rid of the buses.
Yeah, I think it could like definitely put a hurt on a place like Pittsburgh for their taxi business. I mean, I don't think they have that many taxis, but I think it would like sort of put a nail in the coffin.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that would be so... Like, why do people take mass transportation or taxis? It's because they don't want to deal with driving where they're going. You know, or they don't want to leave their car wherever they're going. But if you had a self-driving car...
Or you're drunk.
You could just hop in. It takes you where you're going. You program your address in. It'll go back to your house. Like, all of those worries people had, the reasons why they took mass transit, they never have to do that again.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't even be like... It can be, like, super simple. Like, there's a big freaking, like, red button on the dash. You hit it, it takes you home.
Yeah.
It's like, go home, car. Go home.
Like, when you're drunk, you just come in, slam your head off the red button, and you go home.
Yeah, or it just has, like, an alcohol detector. And if it's, like... if it detects you have, like, alcohol in your breath, it just takes you home.
If you blow a .08, you're going home.
Yeah, like, it won't let you go to another bar. It's like, nope, you're going home, human.
Damn you, car!
You're drunk.
How am I drunk? I want some more beer. So yes, Toyota, good job. Everybody needs to implement this because
that's what I hear drunk people say all the time. I want some more beer.
I want some more alcohol. Our next article. We have a bunch of security and privacy related articles this week. Ryan, I think this was actually something that you did post. Not specifically this article, but I believe you posted a link to a Pastebin.
Oh.
It was a...
I guess Anonymous put up this, you know, like, letter to the FBI saying, hello there, FBI. And basically they were saying, you know, you can't track us down, we're going to do what we want, we're going to expose your lies, blah, blah, blah.
You think you arrested us, the article we talked about last week. Like,
apparently
you're mistaken.
You're wrong. You know, like, it's like trying to arrest the Borg. Like, there's just, like, millions of them. So, I just thought it was pretty interesting. Like, they're really, like, you know, all out. The thing about an organization like this is, though, can you really take anything seriously that comes from them, like, that's in the public domain? Like, I'm sure the FBI knows if it's them or not. But for us, we don't know.
Right.
This could just be some, like, 13-year-old having fun in his, you know...
Right.
On his computer or on his school's computer or something.
Yeah, that kind of brings up all of these news organizations.
Because 13-year-olds are like all about, you know, taking over the world with, you know.
They're like Stewie from Family Guy.
Like hacktivism and stuff. Yeah.
13-year-olds. 13. You know. I hate 13-year-olds.
Anyway.
But, yeah, like, you know, it kind of brings up all of these, you know, this one's from the Boy Genius Report. They picked up the Pastebin article. What type of research do they do to make sure that this is real? Or do they just pick it up and say, oh, crap, we better report on this before somebody else does?
Yeah, there's that too. Like, I mean, that's why I said, like, I don't know if it's real. I don't have the resources to do that. Maybe Boy Genius Report does have the resources to say it's real, and you're just supposed to take them on their word.
Yeah, I mean, what would you have to do? You would have to, like, subpoena Pastebin to get the IP address of whoever posted that specific time.
Not necessarily. I mean, like, you know... Historically speaking, like before the internet age, when there were like legal groups, you know, or whatever, the news media typically did have sources that they could verify the authenticity. It was still on the reader to then rely on that specific newspaper or news outlet.
Right.
Now, can you trust the Boy Genius Report? It's a pretty good webpage.
I would say, yeah.
But the thing is, like, I think the level of journalistic integrity among the tech industry is way below, like, normal classical journalistic integrity. I wouldn't say, like, I mean, it's probably the same as everybody else today. But
yeah, I mean, we've seen things on Bloomberg that were just completely false. You know, we talked about them a couple months ago.
Yeah, like, oh, such and such is going to happen, you know, tomorrow. So, I don't know. It's just interesting that there's like this back and forth between Anonymous and the FBI, and they're kind of like, it seems like they're ratcheting up the tension.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that we talked about Anon Plus, you know, the Anonymous group's answer to Google Plus, their own social network. Well, funny thing happened, some other hackers hacked Anon Plus. Their message, we are Turkey-eye, we are Akinsular. Like, can you understand? I don't know.
I don't know what they're saying. It's like really bad broken English.
Yeah. This logo suits you more. How dare you rise against the world? Do you really think that you are Ottoman Empire? We thought you before that you cannot challenge with the world, and we teach you cannot be social. Now all of you go to your doghouse.
We are all your base.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't purposely saying this wrong. Like, that's the word for word, you know, what they wrote when they hacked Anon
We have
Plus.
All your base.
All your base are belong to us.
Oh, that's what it is. All your base are belong to us.
What game was that? It was an old NES game.
No clue, dude. No clue. I just know the meme.
Yeah. But, I just thought it was kind of funny. You know, we always talk about, oh, please, Anonymous, don't hack us. Well, looks like somebody turned it around on them.
Yep.
And another group of hackers is going after Anonymous. So,
apparently, the news is reporting that their official, or their hackers from Turkey that are part of the Turkish government, because they're getting back at Anonymous for hacking the Turkish, like...
Right, when they did that a month or so ago.
Crazy, crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy times to live in, people. I'm telling you, this is crazy times.
It seems like every week it's something else with Anonymous. They're hacking somebody, the FBI's arresting them, somebody is hacking the FBI. Like, it's something new every week, and it's going to be like a year from now until we actually see what the result of all of this is. So our next article, if you remember a couple songcasts ago, we talked about the rental company Aaron's. Mm-hmm. They rented out a laptop to somebody, and they spied on them by turning on the webcam and taking pictures.
Which is so wrong.
Very wrong. But, actually, no, it's not. Because a judge now ruled...
What?
...that they are completely allowed to do this. So, basically, it was... I don't know if it was a class action, or if he was just speaking for the class, assuming that everybody who ever owned from Aaron's would be a part of the class. But the key quote from the judge's statement, which is linked from this Slashdot article if you download the talking points. Moreover, it is purely conjecture that the other members of the putative class will be subjected to remote access of personal information. So basically he's like, sure, the judge says, sure, they did it to this one person, but it's purely conjecture that they're going to do it to anybody else. So I'm going to allow it. So now there is precedence that rental companies can spy on people if there's a webcam on the laptop that they're renting them.
This is crap.
This is crap. This is total crap. But, I mean, crap or not, there's now a court case that says it's possible. So that's, you know, if you remember when I opened the show, I said never rent a laptop. This is why. Or anything with a video camera that connects to the internet.
Yeah.
Because apparently now, because of this court case, any company can remotely turn it on and spy on you. Well, do you remember, it was more than a couple months ago, the school that did that?
Yeah, it was in Philly, I think, right?
I don't remember where it was.
Pretty sure.
But they gave laptops to their students. Some of the students took them home. They were allowed to. That was part of the deal. And the school turned on the camera and started snapping pictures. That was not cool. Well, apparently that's now allowed to. So our next article from HelpNet Security. Google warns users about active malware infection. Have you seen this in any of your Google searching?
Nope.
So apparently, when you are searching Google, if you have a certain piece of malware installed on your computer, the kind that infects Google search results, Google will inject some code into that page to pop up a big yellow warning banner to let you know that your computer appears to be infected. So this could go one of two ways. I want to know which way you think this is. Way number one, this is awesome that Google is taking precautions because, you know, the most recent security threat were Google image search poisoning, and that's how a lot of people were getting zero-day attacked. Mm-hmm. Or number two, that their web pages now run code against your machine to determine whether you have this infection. You know, they have to determine that you have this malware installed somehow. So they
but if it's probably something related to the browser and that they have like permission to do, I don't think they've like...
Well, that's I don't know what it is. Are they detecting that the malware is trying to alter the page somehow, or are they actually running a quote-unquote scan against your machine?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know for sure, but my guess is that they would probably only have access to something that was like trying to affect the page or, you know, or one of their servers or something.
Yeah, I wish this article, I wish anybody said more as to how they're doing this.
If they did that, though, then people would know how they're doing it. They could, like, would give...
That's true.
Would give the hackers information.
And then they would be able to get around it. Yes. So Google will probably never tell anybody. So, basically, you think this is a good thing? They're warning people?
Yeah, I even like the ones where the ISPs tell you, hey, dude, your machine's infected with crap. Quit it.
Yeah, Comcast actually did that. Yeah. When you first opened up the Comcast homepage, if that was your startup page, mm-hmm. they would put up a little banner.
I like it.
Yeah, I run Linux and Mac, so this has never been a problem for me. And
yet.
But of any of the Windows machines that I've been on, I guess I've never had a virus to actually see this in action. So I can't speak from experience as to how this does anything. If any of you out there listening see this, you know, let us know. You can see the article from net-security.org. It's a big yellow warning banner at the top of a Google search results page. Let us know if you've ever seen it and what you did to get that. Pretty sure I was watching porn, but just saying. So our next article from the Kaspersky Threat Post. This was actually something that a frequent guest, Matt Hunt, posted. And I thought it was very interesting because I have a machine that could possibly be affected by this. Apple laptop batteries can be bricked and the firmware hacked. That's just the title of the article. What they really can do, if this is actually an exploitable vulnerability, is they can make your computer blow up. No joke.
Well, yeah, possibly.
Yeah, possibly. But still, that is a possibility. So basically, all laptop batteries have smart chips in them, and that's how the batteries tell the computer. As opposed to potato chips, because that won't tell anything. That tells the computer, you know, how fully charged it is, how much longer you go. You know, it lets you do things like setting a certain throughput of the electricity through the battery if you're in power saving mode, whatever. It lets you control the battery. All laptop batteries have this. But the batteries that Apple uses, apparently Apple never changed the default admin password to the smart chips on the batteries. So this one hacker, just on accident, he was actually looking for another vulnerability and just happened to figure this out. He was able to download a software update, you know, similar to a Windows update, an Apple software update where they modified the battery. He deconstructed that update, pulled out the firmware part, found where the password was in there, realized it was default. Then he disassembled that and found out that there are multiple ways that you can have access to the battery. There's what Apple did in that update, which is known as an unsealed mode, which lets you change certain settings. But then there's a fully administrative mode, which lets you update the firmware and change literally anything. And because the password was default, he was able to get into administrative mode of the battery and do things like, what did they say?
Like administrate your battery?
Yeah, I mean, he said specifically
I'm going to administrate
what he changed.
Battery.
I'm going to administrate your battery.
I'm going to add some users to your battery and possibly add it to a domain.
Yeah, so the article does say it, but I can't find it right now. But basically, he was able to set a setting on the battery that would trick the computer into thinking that it was never fully charged. So even when the cells were full, it would keep trying to charge it, overheating the battery, and that could possibly lead to a cell explosion.
Ooh.
So if attackers got a hold of this and were able to get some sort of malware on your computer that, you know, had root privileges that was able to access this battery firmware.
They could blow your MacBook up.
They could blow your MacBook up.
It's crazy. It's a good thing they discontinued that piece of crap.
Seriously. I think this is any. I think this is literally any Apple mobile computer that uses these batteries. And I replied to Matt whenever he posted this. I'm like, so that's why my MacBook gets so hot. Really, they do get hot. But yeah, this is...
Well, it's. I guess this is slightly better than like Toshiba computers that just randomly explode.
I remember like a year or so ago, there was a couple pictures from... It was either DEF CON or Black. No, it was a GIAC certification course where somebody with a Dell laptop, just in the middle of class, it exploded and burst into flames. And somebody was there taking pictures of it. Like, holy crap.
Well, I can remember when like the first reports of these like exploding batteries came out. And I was like, this is back like, I don't know, close to 10 years ago when lithium ion batteries first started appearing in laptops.
They were very unstable.
Yeah. And like, I think it was like Toshiba or Compaq or one of them. It was like they had pictures on Hard OCP that like, you know, some dude's laptop returned to Best Buy and they showed pictures of it. And like, it had like, it looked like a nuclear meltdown. I mean, it was like weird looking how it melted.
Yeah. And people wonder why whenever you go on planes, you know, certain companies make you take the batteries out of your items if they're in luggage rather than in a carry on. And yeah, because crap like this could happen.
Yeah.
But this is ridiculous. I mean, sure, it's easier on Apple computers because they use the default firmware password. But I mean, password hacking on those is probably just as easy as password hacking on anything else. So it's only a matter of time until the quote-unquote bad guys who just want to destroy things figure out how to crack battery passwords on Dells and HPs and anything else and start spitting out malware to do that to every computer. Do you think they'll do that? Because, I mean, really, mostly hackers now are doing things to make money. This just causes destruction. We don't see very many destructive malware bits out there anymore.
I don't know. Someday they'll be like, give us money or we will make your laptop explode.
I can see Anonymous doing this at the FBI.
Yeah, because the FBI uses Macs.
Whatever. You know, if they figure it out on any laptop, figure out people who work for the FBI, load the malware on their computer, wait till they get to work, you know,
sometime
between 8 and 5.
Well, it's easy on a Windows computer. You just put Prime 95 on it. It melts.
And turn it on.
Yeah.
Yeah, Prime 95 is a what do they call that? It's a testing tool. What's the... Not benchmark.
Distributed networking? Well, it's like it's kind of a burn-in.
That's what I was thinking.
Or like load testing.
I knew it was a B word. Yeah, burn-in tool. You can peg the processor and peg the memory and.
Yeah, I always use that when I have like a flaky computer to try and like test it.
Yep. See what fails first. But yeah, I can totally see somebody like doing this. You know, putting malware on somebody's computer who they know works for the FBI or the CIA, and then sending it to detonate between 8 and 5. You know, when they know they're going to be at work. That's really what it is now. You know, they can set a computer to detonate. That's scary. I'm sorry I just gave that idea to all the bad guys out there, but I'm sure you thought of it before I did. So let's get away from that, and let's start talking about fake stuff. Not boobs. We're still in technology here. 9to5 Mac has an article that will... I don't want to say scare you, but really make you mad if you live in China. So we all know that fake stuff comes from China. Bootlegged iPods, bootlegged electronics, bootlegged DVDs.
Lots of kerf.
What?
Kerf.
Kerf?
Keeping it real fake.
Never heard of that before.
Oh, man. You don't read Engadget ever?
I guess not as much as you. I've never...
Well, I mean, like every couple of days they have iPhone 5... And beside it, it has in parentheses like kerf, keeping it real fake.
I've never seen that.
Oh. Yeah.
I mean, I don't go to Engadget the page.
Right.
I only see it through like dig RSS feeds and stuff. But anyways, so we all know China fakes stuff and sells it. Now, if you live in China, you could walk into a store, a physical store, that looks exactly 100% like an Apple store. Exact same tables, exact same stands to hold up the laptops and the iPads, exact same materials, same t-shirts on the employees, and it's fake. It's not an Apple store. And the worst part is the people who work there actually think they work for Apple.
Oh, wow.
The person who owns these stores, they have been able to trick everybody. I mean, have you
taken
a look?
I saw one. I saw one of the pictures. It's not in this article, but they had misspelled store. So that was kind of a tip off.
Okay, yeah, that one. This article, everything looks decent.
Yeah, well, except for the fact that they put Apple Store underneath the Apple, which they don't do at Apple Stores.
Yeah.
So there was some things like they said, like, here's how you know it's not an Apple Store. But yeah, like, it's crazy. Like, you know, if you've been in an Apple Store, they have those, like, weird things that hold the iPads, like those glass, like, cup holder things.
Yeah.
And all the, like, round tables and different things.
With the light-colored wood.
Yeah, and the stools and the shelves full of equipment or accessories. It's exactly the same. It's pretty spooky.
Yeah, and what this article said, you know, those iPad holders you were talking about, you can't buy those. Those are not for sale to the general public.
Well, right, but it's probably all made in China anyways.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm guessing that somebody at the factory is just, like, saying, oh, here you go.
Yeah, giving them a couple hundred.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, this is I don't want to say scary, because it's not scary. I mean, what's the worst that's going to happen?
Oh, you buy something from a non-Apple store. That's terrible. You're not giving money to our awesome American corporation,
okay,
Apple.
That is horrible.
I don't know. Well, are they real? Is it real stuff, like real iPads and stuff, or are they fake iPads too?
It didn't say. I mean, it probably looks like it's probably real stuff. It's probably gray market stuff, you know.
Or it could be like Ollie's. It could be just good stuff, cheap.
Good stuff, cheap. I wish I knew. We were just talking about TV show theme songs during supper. I wish I knew the Ollie's jingle. I could sing it.
No, I don't even know if they have one.
They don't?
I don't.
Oh, I need to make one for them. Yeah. We need to think about that. So our next article from Reuters, still talking about the iPhone. Now, this one is actually scary. The police to begin iPhone iris scans amid piracy concerns.
Piracy or privacy?
Privacy, I'm sorry. I said piracy. Privacy concerns.
Arrgh, in order to stop the pirates, we must give them iPhone iris scans. If you don't take the scan, you walk the plank, matey.
So maybe I should read it as a British person. Police to begin iPhone iris scans amid privacy concerns. There, no, I can't screw that up now.
That was my privacy.
Privacy, yeah. There, so it doesn't sound anywhere close to piracy. Privacy. So what do you think of this?
Well, what are they using it for? This is just like, I mean, what I read is that they're using it to identify people, like criminal suspects, after they've already been taken into custody. Or, for instance, like to make sure that the right prisoner is released from prisons when there's like a parole, which I think is good.
Yeah, I mean, that's all the article said. I guess they were kind of pointing out that this could be used anywhere by any quote-unquote law enforcement. So you could pull over for a speeding ticket. They might scan your eye. You go through TSA, security checkpoint at the airport. They might want to scan your eye. Like,
well, I mean, good luck, because my iris isn't going to be in any database, you know? Like, I think the only way you should, like, fine if they want to scan it, but they shouldn't be able to store it unless I give them permission. You know, and if you're a criminal, you've given up some of your rights, so they are allowed to do that automatically. But
what about for people who have certain level of clearances within the government? The government takes your fingerprints.
The iris could be another thing. I don't know that they use those. I don't know if those fingerprints go into like a criminal database.
Yeah, you're in the system, dude. You get picked up by the police, they will find you. It's the same system.
Yeah, I guess.
Because, I mean, where do you go to get your fingerprints taken? You go to the state police or the local police office?
Yeah, but, I mean, you can just sand your fingerprints off. It's not a big deal.
You could do that. Can't sand your iris off.
No, I guess not.
But, I mean, I guess this is the point is that, you know, they've already made fingerprints a mandatory thing. What if they make irises a mandatory thing? Then they're stored, and now anywhere you go, they could scan your iris, and they don't have to store it when they scan it. They could just check the database and then discard it.
Yeah.
Like, this could be another thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like the fact that they would have that information about you, but
yeah, it's one of those things. Do you want to give up a couple of your rights to ensure your safety?
Yeah, those who prefer security instead of liberty deserve neither.
So your answer is no.
Right.
So let's move on. We have just a few mobile articles this week. Nothing really major. You know, the past couple weeks hasn't been very very tech news oriented, I guess.
Did I say that right? Those who prefer security instead of liberty. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you said it right.
Sorry.
I mean, really, the biggest thing that happened in the past week in tech news is that the Twit studio moved from the cottage to the new
brick Twit house.
Dude, have you watched any of the shows from the new?
No.
It looks amazing.
Yeah.
It looks like freaking screensavers.
Hey,
from back
Leo
in the
Laporte,
day.
If you're out there, give us a job.
Seriously, I will work for you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if I want to go live in
California. No, but I will be your East Coast.
Yeah, we can be your East Coast, like, reporters.
I know a perfect building. The building that I work in right now, the bottom floor is 100% empty.
Nice.
We could use that. Seriously, this would be awesome. I would love to be the East Coast version of Twit.
Well, or just, like, you know, East Coast, like, on-site reporters.
Well, yeah, whatever.
I will be your Johnstown Bureau reporter.
Seriously, let's do it.
Kevin can be your Westmont.
Seriously, though, I wouldn't mind, like, taking a trip to NYC every once in a while when a big thing happens in an Apple store or whatever to cover it. Dude, sign me up.
Yeah.
But, yeah, go watch. The newest Twit was done there. It is an amazing-looking studio. Like, he spent some major cash to make this thing.
He must be doing pretty well for himself.
Dude, major cash.
Yeah.
Like, this looks like a real TV studio. Amazing. Anyways, we were talking about mobile stuff. So, do you remember the Color app?
No, I've never even heard of it until I saw this article, which
really?
I actually saw before you tagged.
Were you not on the show where we talked about the Color app? It was a long time ago.
No, I mustn't have been.
Oh, so let me explain it a little bit. It's an app for the iPhone, and it is a photography app. It's a picture-taking app. And the whole point is it is social, location-based picture-taking. So whenever you go out, you open up the Color app, you start taking a picture. Say you're at a concert. It will tell via multiple things, GPS, via sound samples that it takes, where you are. And inside of the Color app, when you start taking pictures, there's like a stream tab or whatever, and you start seeing all of the pictures that people around you are taking with the Color app. So it's like an instant social sharing photography app. And a lot of people said, this is so stupid. You know, there's no point to this. Why is this app even out there? A lot of people didn't even know what it did at the beginning. But now, it must be making pretty big waves because Google tried to buy it for $200 million. And Color, the company, said, uh-uh. Would you turn down $200 million from Google?
No. I mean, I know everyone's probably seen The Social Network and they saw Justin Timberlake and they're like, why sell out for $1 million if you can get $1 billion?
Yeah.
And it's like, I guess maybe I'm just different in that some people just have that passion and they just want to like keep working on it. But that's different from just being greedy. Like, you know, in terms of money, like if somebody's going to give me a life-changing amount of money to the point where most likely won't have to work again, and then I can really pursue my dreams and, like,
right.
sort of, like, not worry. Like, because, like, you know, like, I might want to do, like, art. Because, like, a lot of times you see these successful people, and, like, they start painting, or they get into photography, or they start singing.
I would love to do
albums.
Photography full-time.
Yeah. There's things that, like, people do because they don't have to worry about money. You know, so I guess if I were in that situation, I probably would just, like, if it got to a point where I'm like, well, I can sit back on my ass and not have to worry at all anymore and just do the things I want to do, then I would probably take it. If it's like borderline, like, you know, $1 million is a lot of money.
But it's not life changing.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to help you. Like it'll probably, you'd pay off your bills and like, you'd be set for retirement possibly, but you'd still have to work and you'd still have to like make sure, you know, you couldn't just like be carefree.
Right.
So you'd still have to like put some thought into your like daily life. So, I mean, that may sound weird to some people, but I mean, $1 million just doesn't, it's not what it used to be.
I just did some retirement planning recently, and yeah, $1 million is absolutely nothing.
Yeah, compared to what, you know, if you just think over the long haul, you know, if you're like, if you're thinking it's just going to be like, oh, yeah, I mean, you could take the money, but you might also have an idea that would get you a lot more money.
Right.
But I think there's just a point in which once you hit that threshold, $200 million to me,
it's a lot of money.
Unless they had like 400 people involved in the company already that all had like shares, then
right.
it might not have been as attractive, but still, just it's a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you know, what's the reason? Are they greedy? Do they want to keep working on it? But for that second
my
point,
guess is they probably saw that freaking movie and they're like, oh, we're gonna hold up for $1 billion.
And I mean, if they wanted to keep working on it, Google buys up companies all the time And they're not like, you know, Microsoft or anybody else where they buy up a company to kill it. When Google buys products, they integrate it. They keep the people on.
Yeah.
I forget the example of the one recent company. The dude was on Twit. Google bought his company, and now the dude works for Google. Like, they don't just buy you and fire you. They bring you on. So, I mean, if Google bought Color, the app might have been integrated into a Google product, but these people still would have been able to work on it, except for Google now, probably making a lot more money.
Right.
Like, I just don't understand why you turn down $200 million. Does not make sense. Even Michael Arrington agrees with us. Should Color have taken the Google deal? Absolutely yes.
Yeah, I would have taken it.
Yeah, I was stupid of them to say no. Our next article, still talking about the iPhone. Actually, all three articles pretty much iPhone-based. The iPhone 5 will have a voice control feature called Assistant. This is from a leaked screenshot from a dev version of iOS 5. Did you see anything? I guess we could talk about this and the next article all in one, because the next article talks about some newer features in iOS 5. Did you see anything, I don't want to say life-changing, but any major features coming out in the new version of iOS that makes you think, oh, they're actually innovating and doing something different?
Nothing huge. I mean, the Wi-Fi sync is a long time coming, I think. They have more support for like AirPlay to like do video, which I think AirPlay is something that's totally underdeveloped by Apple. Like, I have one of their AirPort devices, and that lets me stream iTunes to it and then to a stereo remotely. I think they should be selling all kinds of those devices, like for video and stuff, to like put video all through your house. They could easily sell a networked video solution. You know,
I would buy it right now
with like centralized cable tuners or something.
Yeah, because my solution now is not the best.
Yeah, they're totally missing the mark. But anyway, there's a few things in there that are kind of like, I'm like, well, at least they're continuing to develop like a technology that I think is pretty good. But you know, like rest
this,
of it,
this assistant feature seems kind of cool. You know, it's not just voice control to make calls as it was in the past. This is supposed to be integrated into your other apps like your calendar, you know, location stuff, other applications installed. So Assistant seems like you might be able to voice control your entire iPhone. So that might be cool. Have you used voice control on any of your phones that have it?
Yeah, like the Google app that I had for my BlackBerry had voice search. My fiance's Google phone or Android phone has voice search. And I also had an app for the BlackBerry. Like, this is like before voice search for anything existed. It was called Vlingo. And you could install it, and you could actually, like, it could do searching, it could do text messages, it could do calling. And it was pretty sweet, actually. But it was like $5, I think, the app.
Yeah, there's really only, I don't see anything major in iOS 5. There was a couple things that I saw that were kind of cool, like iMessage, you know, Apple's answer to BlackBerry Messenger. So they're getting a very similar thing. Over-the-air software updates. You no longer have to plug into a computer to upgrade the firmware.
Yeah, it's good. For them, it's good for these things are coming because, you know, like I've been saying, it's not a post-PC world until you don't need a PC to sync up an iPad or an iPhone. So,
and just one thing that's kind of cool is the photo adjustments, like the built-in camera app will have things like red eye removal and, you know, certain things that people needed Instagram or other applications to do, you can now do just based in the regular camera app. So that's kind of cool. Twitter integration. Twitter's going to be integrated with everything in the OS. Do you think that's a good or a bad move, considering Google Plus is just about to kill Twitter?
Well, here's the thing. Because Apple's so inflexible, Twitter wasn't able to do that. Like on BlackBerry, if you downloaded a Twitter app, it could insert itself into context menus if you approved it. So you could say send to such and such Twitter program.
So from any app, you could do that.
Pretty much. Or it might even like be dependent on the type of like media that you're looking at. Like it might do it for like pictures and text, but not for like video or something. It had some, and you had to give it permission. Like when you install the app, it'd say, do you want to allow this to, you know, install itself into context menus? And it's nice, but that's something you couldn't do with Apple's product.
Right.
So it takes a move like them to integrate it. And I guess for Apple people, it's great. But for me, it's like, well, whatever. I've already had it right. for years. And
yeah, I'm just looking long term. Like, will Twitter be around in a year if Google Plus keeps going the way it's going?
Yeah, I mean, but I don't. I look for the app, the fight between Apple and Google to get even more fierce.
Really?
Yeah, I think I have a feeling that you know, Apple's gonna have to push into the social. Make some push into the social media world, and that might mean them buying Facebook or buying Twitter.
Yeah, they could do that
because they don't have anything. I mean, I think their Google Meet. Well, we'll see what comes out with like their new Google Me stuff, Apple Me. What's it? Me
iCloud.
Yeah, but don't they have a Me, that Me thing? Apple Me.
They had Mobile Me.
Mobile Me.
But I think they're like starting to get rid of that because of iCloud.
Right, but I guess they're going to probably... I still have a feeling they're going to come out with some kind of Me. Like
they're going to like re...
The personalization part of it, or the social part of it. They're going to have to bring that back.
They'll add a feature to iCloud to be like a social network.
Like iCloud.me.
I hope not. I don't want another social network.
Well, you don't, but it's going to be... In order for them to get the data that they need for advertising, how are they going to get it? They're going to have to pay Google or they're going to have to pay Facebook.
And that's another thing. Like they use Google Maps in their default map application. If they continue fighting with Google, are they going to lose all of the Google services they already have?
Well, you know, I read an article today that actually mentioned about, you know, Apple and its dependence on Google Maps. And they were saying that, you know, Bing has really just sort of been a waste of money for Microsoft. Like, they're still number two. And that it's sort of like a guaranteed revenue thing. Like, you're guaranteed to have Bing around because you just need a second search algorithm. But back on topic, that they should sell it and it'd be a good match for Apple, actually, because it'd bring along a mapping service.
Right.
And they could integrate it into their business. But I don't see that. I don't see them buying it. But it's an interesting concept.
Yeah, and really, Bing has the best bird's eye view.
It's awesome.
The best, I guess, real, quote-unquote, real view maps.
Yeah. Their aerial and bird map view is really good. I mean, it doesn't have it everywhere in the country, but it's really good.
I mean, it has it here, so, you know, it's decent.
Yeah, it does. Some places it doesn't, though. But.
Yeah, so I honestly can't wait until the next iPhone comes out. Yeah. People are saying September.
We'll see.
I don't know. I hope it's 4G, because as our One More Thing article, you know, something has just popped up this week. A new batch of Verizon cities will get LTE service on August 18th. Listed under those cities, Altoona and Johnstown, Pennsylvania.
Sweet! And,
yes.
And the article that I was sent, my friend said that there's a lot of, like, it said communities along 219 as well.
Oh, so they're going to be putting up towers, like, on the outskirts of the towns that will cover, like, Ebensburg.
Yeah.
And the towns in between Altoona and Johnstown.
Yeah, so...
Crescent, maybe...
Or I don't know if it said 219, but like along the highways between there.
So probably 22 and 219.
Yeah. So hopefully it'll cover. I mean, it's more just being able to like go between the two, you know, and have 4G. But yeah, it'd be nice if it covered the towns, all the towns. So.
Yeah. And there's a big map, you know, linked on the article from droidlife.com that shows red being 3G, which is kind of funny. Almost 0% of West Virginia has 3G. Like that's the only state.
I think Sprint has like a stronghold there. They own most of the CDMA towers.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because West Virginia and the big government installation in Nevada where Area 51 is are pretty much the only two areas that are completely blank. And White Sands, New Mexico, also blank. But yeah, the green stars being new cities and the yellow circles being current 4G cities. Kind of interesting. North Carolina... They have the most of like everybody.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Why?
Well, it is a big tech boom down there. So
really?
Yeah.
All they have is the Apple data center.
Where is it? South?
North.
Isn't that Raleigh-Durham?
Yeah.
That's the tech triangle.
What the hell's that?
Oh, man. I mean, it's all like there's a bunch of... It's like in sort of like another Silicon Valley.
Really?
Yeah.
I never heard of that.
Yeah. Like I think SAS is down there and there's a bunch...
Interesting. Yeah, I was just wondering.
Yeah, look up Tech Triangle on Wikipedia when you get a chance.
So either way, main point of this article was that we're getting 4G. Doesn't matter to me because my phone can't do it. Yours can't either, right? Your BlackBerry. Yeah.
No, no.
Yeah, I mean, so we're both going to have to buy new phones.
Basically, I'm waiting until 4G, you know, is available here, and that's probably when I'll make my next purchase. And then it's going to be whether or not I want to hold out for a Windows phone or just go with some Android offering, which I haven't decided yet. It's looking like the Windows stuff might be far off and far out enough that I could go ahead and get an Android phone.
And then be far enough through your contract.
And then before, it'll be 2 years until really anything comes to fruition with Windows. It's like where I really want to jump on it.
I think they're going to die by then.
Yeah, we'll see.
You know, everybody comes out with 4G this year and they have to wait another 2 years.
Oh.
That's rough for them.
Well, I'm saying more with Verizon, not that they might have like 4G phones on other services, but Verizon just seems to take forever with like anything other than Android.
Yeah, that is true.
So.
Yeah, so 4G in our area, August 18th, new iPhone, that same time in September. Let's see if it's going to be 4G. If not, I'm probably not going to buy it. I know everybody's going to yell at me. They're like, you buy every iPhone that comes out. Yeah, but this one I might not. Unless it looks really cool.
Yeah, what do you need? The new one, you know.
I don't.
Yeah.
I don't need anything that it does. If it had 4G, that would be the only reason that I would buy
it. Right.
Yeah, so we'll see. It's just one of those disappointing things. So anything else that you saw come up this week that was interesting?
Nope.
Yeah, me either. That was pretty much it. So that is it for this week's edition of the Slongcast. Get you guys a short one this week. Keep it about an hour.
Nice.
We'll never be able to do this again. as usual, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter. My username is Slongcack. Ryan, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter /RyanLancey or at www.lancipedia.com.
And the next episode we have will be episode 41. So if you want us to talk about anything, make sure you bookmark it on Delicious as Slongcast041. If you want us to answer a question, you have a tech problem or just something you want us to answer for you, email slongcast@kevinslonka.com. And that is it for this week's episode. Dovizania.